Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, sir.
What's up? What's up?
What's up? What's up? Since we only got like 28 minutes, I'm going to start the show in like 10 seconds. That's all right?
You said what?
The show, I'm going to start the show in like 15 seconds, and then when Rome calls in, I'll just introduce him.
All right.
Just need to get my thoughts together. Rome need to hurry up. I'm ready to go to sleep.
But he was saying he was going to call in first.
I know. What's wrong with that dude? All right, I'm about to start the show.
All right.
And welcome back to HBCU Voice. I'm your host, Jonathan Alexander, here with a co-host, Trent Little, here on our first show of the new year. How you doing, Trent? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, man. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It has been a while. I'm glad we can start it back up. I'm ready to talk about some HBCU sports. What about you?
Oh, of course, of course.
Has the game ended already?
It's basically over. It was a good one, but I think it's coming to an end, and Bama's Nick Saban's claiming another championship.
Yeah, Clemson, the defense just messed up at the end. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it was definitely entertaining.
Yeah, well, we're joined by another co-host, Jerome Rome Brown. How you doing, Jerome?
What's up, man?
Let's get into it. Let's talk HBCU sports. It's been a long time. Last time we spoke, it was before the Celebration Bowl. Celebration Bowl was had pretty good attendance. I think it was at the time, was it the 15th watched bowl game in FBS? I would assume it's the 16th or the 17th now, or the 17th now that you had the national championship and the games that preceded that. So let me ask y'all, do y'all like the Celebration Bowl now? I know we disagreed with it at first. Well, Rome agreed with it. But, Trent, you disagreed with it like me. Do you like the Celebration Bowl now? Trent, start it off.
Well, I didn't totally disagree with it. I felt that, of course, you want to compete, and you want to compete to the highest level, which you want to compete into the FCS playoffs. But one thing about the Celebration Bowl, it puts other eyes on HBCU football that – most people wouldn't watch. I mean, it was December 18th, I want to say, but it was a Saturday. It started the bowl season off, and it was a perfect storm because, of course, you had a good game. So if it wasn't for that good game and you didn't have the play of I can't think of the A&T's running back name right now, but just he probably had one of the better bowl. Like, it'll be a memory from this bowl season. So it was a perfect storm. It was the first football game, and there's not a lot of stuff to watch on TV. So you have to watch football, and it's good football on. So I think it was definitely a perfect storm for HBCU football, and it was definitely a big show.
Wrong way you got to
hear. Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, from what I see, the final number is it was actually 15. It outdrew 15 FBS bowl games. And so that was, you know, a great game. Initially, I did not agree with the game, but I came around on it. Of course, Aaron and me, we both covered the game, and it was a good atmosphere. All Corn State fans came out in droves, and so did A&T. They're well represented. A&T, of course, prevailed on the field. Tariq Cohen was big in the game, had a great game at running back, 295 yards rushing. I mean, it was just a great atmosphere. And the game was, I think it was a success. I'm looking forward to seeing it every year, and as long as there are two good teams and a solid game, I think it'll continue to do well in attendance wise and also on TV as well.
And for me, I hated the idea of the Celebration Bowl. I still kind of despise it a little bit. But, you know, after seeing the results and what it did, it was on national television on ABC. It got a lot of people watching, and a lot of people probably didn't know that HBCU was watched the game. We talked about this another time. I was in L.A. at the time at Celebration Bowl, and in the L.A. Times, they had every single bowl game that was coming on that weekend on the list except the Celebration Bowl. And it stood out to me, and it made me realize that, you know, HBCUs are less known than what you think down here on the East Coast, and especially in the South. So I'll say I like the Celebration Bowl. I know they got a contract, so, you know, I agree with it. I hope they, you know, they stick with it for that contract. But after that contract, I want HBCUs to move on and be able to compete in the FCS playoffs, because, you know, players are going to get fed up after a while. They're going to say, you know, what am I playing for? I'm playing for the so-called HBCU National Championship to compete against the best black colleges. You know, that's not what you want to compete for. You want to compete to be the best of the best. That's what I want to see after this contract is up. You know, let's
well, I will say the only
– move on.
The only – I guess this is more for the actual programs in the HBCUs. But for the SWAC and the MEAC, they both get $1 million payout, and that's like I guess almost $100,000 for each school, and that's a lot more than you would receive from being in the FCS playoffs. So that's the only balance that you have to think about. It's like, okay, well, financially we need this. This is better for our program, but at the same time, yeah, you're not competing at the highest level. You're still being termed the HBCU National Championship, which doesn't exist. And so it's the only, I guess that's what you have to think about. You have to think about the finances and also the play or the exposure. Like something has to give. What do you think is the most important, basically? That's what those ADs have to think about.
You know, that's definitely true. I agree. You know, the exposure is great. The money is great. But then, and I think that time period that they have that contract for, I think is, you know, I think that'll last long enough. And I think that'll be good for the HBCUs. But after that, you know, you got to move on. You know, there comes a time when you got to move on, and you got to entice recruits. If you want to get better, you're getting the exposure to get show people that the program's out here. Now it's time to show people that you got something to compete for after this contract is up.
It's all on the schools, man. To me, I think they just have to become more competitive in their regular season schedule. If you're going to schedule other FCS schools, then you got to beat them. If you just can't beat up on your conference, and that's, of course, not really going to prove anything, because when it's time to play in the FCS playoffs, if you can't even beat on your conference, which the SWAC and the MEAC are often the lower two conferences in FCS, then, you know, you got to – if you don't beat them, then you're not really proving anything. So, you know, you got to beat those other FCS schools. You got to schedule harder, especially if you're not in the Celebration Bowl and you want that at-large bid. So, you know, it's a good time, a 4 or 5 year period where it'll give HBCUs – in the MEAC, at least, if they decide to go back to the playoffs, then it'll give them a chance to improve their schools, the facilities, the funding, and everything to recruit better players and to get W's.
Do you think any schools are good enough to make it into the FCS playoffs this year if they didn't have the Celebration Bowl?
I think maybe A&T was the best candidate, and of course they're in the Celebration Bowl, so I think A&T would have given some of those other schools a good run, but I don't think North Carolina Central or Bethune could have handled, you know, getting out of the first round from what I saw.
And that's the thing. It's like it's not enough to just make it to the actual playoffs. You have to go into a deep it has to be a deep run, a consistent deep run for these ADs to start thinking more competitively and on the field. Because right now, of course, it's they're trying to run a program. So, of course, it's like, okay, I need these finances. If we start showing more competitive play on the field and actual making deep runs in the playoffs, then okay, then that mindset may change.
Yeah, but it takes years. I mean, you got to do it a few times prior to this year. Well, prior to going to the Celebration Bowl, I think 1999 was the last time a MEAC school won in the FCS playoffs. So there's not that track record that gave anybody, or probably in the conference leadership or some ADs throughout the conference, to say, okay, we got a legit chance. And when you look at the finances of it, where you know the participating school could get up to, I think, $500,000 or $600,000. I got to bring up my notes. I got to find those. But when you have a big chunk of money that you can get, which is considerably more than going to a playoff game or even traveling and hosting or whatever you might be, then you know, the Celebration Bowl is a good exposure experience for the players, and just a much better overall event than a FCS playoff game.
So my question is, how are these HBCUs going to be able to compete in the future with these other FCS programs? Is it plain and simple that they just have to recruit better? They have to find better coaches? I mean, you know, what's the deal? Why can't they compete?
Yeah, it's the whole thing, man. It's the whole gamut. You got to have coaches, facilities, players, and I mean, they all marry. They all come together. You got to have it from top to bottom. That's why a lot of guys may not go to HBCU, because they don't have the best facilities. The dorms aren't as good. And it's just, that's why I say it takes time. You got to get the good coaches in there who can recruit, can help fundraise, can improve the facilities, and just everything has to come together, because you just can't, you know, players can be great. Or, you know, you can get an unheralded guy, but you got to have a good recruiting class year after year, and then it'll take time. So I think that's what it is, coaching, facilities, and from there comes players, and also the money, which is the bottom line everywhere, all the time.
Yeah. And and I was going to say that the MEAC, the good thing about the Celebration Bowl and it being in Atlanta is bringing MEAC football to that area, which you don't have any of that. I mean, if you can start catching maybe potential recruits just from, okay, we saw you guys when you came here and to the Georgia Dome. I mean, Jerome is an example of somebody that lives in Atlanta and went to North Carolina Central. So maybe you can have some football players that didn't really get the offers they wanted out of high school, and they see an offer from Central and they come up to North Carolina Central strictly because of, oh, we saw you in the Celebration Bowl.
And also the TV aspect, too. Can't forget the national TV exposure. Like, that's, and like how you said earlier, it's the first bowl game on. People want to see football 12 o'clock on a Saturday, man. That's big exposure right there. And it's a good game. There you go. You got all the things you could want. And to get player, I mean, fans of just PWI football or just, you know, BCS football in general, they might want to see a good game, and you expose a whole new aspect of people, a whole new population of people. So it's bigger than just just people in town. You got the TV aspect, which is huge.
Definitely.
That's definitely true. Now, they dubbed this game the HBCU National Championship. How y'all felt about that?
Of course I hate it. I mean, because it is a bowl game. So, I mean, term it the Celebration Bowl. I even saw it at ESPN as the HBCU National Championship, when there's more than two HBCU conferences in the nation. So I can't stand it. It's another way to basically make it an inferior game compared to the other bowl games.
Yeah, I'm against it as well. I think, you know, it's only right if we call it the HBCU National Championship, let's do a playoff and have the CI or SIAC or whatever the other conferences. But, you know, just let it be the Celebration Bowl, the FCS HBCU conferences, and call it like it is. Because I'm sure there have been years where the D2 schools, the D2 HBCUs probably could have knocked off the D1 schools. And it happened with North Carolina Central when they went back-to-back in the CIAA. They beat Southern, I believe, one of those years. So I don't like the moniker, the HBCU National Championship.
And Winston could put a whole bunch of teams, give a whole bunch of teams a run for their money. So
last couple of years, Winston had all those D1 transfers. Yeah, when they were going back down to D2. So yeah, Winston could have gave a lot of schools a run for their money.
But yeah, I don't like it either. I mean, the game already groups HBCUs all together. You're giving us the HBCU National Championship name. You're grouping us again together. You know, I like what you said, Trent. Inferior, that's the word. I mean, making us look inferior. But, you know, that's how people are going to view it, though. Maybe not those D2 schools that are also HBCUs, but, you know, the outside world is going to view it that way, too. So,
but I don't think they will, just because I don't think the outside world does view that as a HBCU national championship until they see the words HBCU National Championship. Most of the outside world don't know what HBCU stands for. So for ESPN to show North Carolina A&T is the 2015 HBCU National Championships, then that outside world knows, those viewers that just started watching the game, then they're terming that, and then they're making it that, and, you know what I'm saying, an inferior game, basically, like inferior gameplay. They're just, most people are thinking, oh, okay, it's the HBCU National Championship from the beginning, unless you went to a HBCU.
Yeah. This is definitely true. Let me ask y'all this question. I want to get this one. It's not much about HBCUs, but talk about black coaches. Several coaching groups, diversity groups, are urging the NCAA to adopt a rule that will require schools to interview at least one minority candidate for a head coaching position before making their selection. In the name of former Grambling coach Eddie Robinson, those groups are the National Association for Coaching Equity and Development, along with National Consortium for Academics and others. So there are just 10 black head coaches among the 128 schools that comprise the FBS. You know, it's pretty alarming. Do y'all agree with this so-called Eddie Robinson rule? Would y'all be open to that?
I appreciate the initiative, but I don't think it will be beneficial. I mean, you look at this is basically the college football's Rooney Rule, which you see in the NFL how most organizations are able to get past that. You saw the Eagles basically have an interview with Deuce Daly, their running back coach, basically, and you knew that he wasn't going to get that job. It was just to make sure that you meet that threshold. So, I appreciate the initiative. I think it's a lot more that has to go into it than actually just, okay, we interviewed him, and now we've met that threshold. I think it should be basically having to interview somebody outside of your university or some. It just has to be deeper. I don't think this is just going to work. It has to be deeper than, let's just interview one minority head coach and let's check that off the list.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. You got to put some more parameters on it. And I look back at the how the Rooney Rule kind of looked in the NFL. And in the history of the NFL, this is interim and permanent head coaches, but there have only been 20 minority coaches. So, you know, that includes a guy like Ron Rivera, who is, I think, Hispanic. So, you know, it's only been 20 head coaches that have been minorities in the NFL. And I think, what was the number you said with, was that FBS or just college football in general? When y'all put out a number.
That was FBS.
FBS, you said 10?
Yeah, that was FBS, 10.
Yeah, that's pathetic to me when, you know, majority of players are African-American or a minority. And then, you know, there has to be more of a connect. So I say, like Trent said, even, you know, you can go from head coach to even offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. There should be some kind of rule where you must interview a guy maybe outside of your school or something like that, because, you know, I think there should definitely be more diversity and a wider range in look when it comes to head coaches and OCs and DCs across the country, FBS, on the FBS level, man?
I definitely agree there needs to be more diversity. I don't know if they should, you know, make a rule where you interview at least one minority coach because, you know, again, like Trent said, you're going to have people interviewing people just so they just because they have to. It's going to be, you know, more of a charity case. I think what needs to happen is these ADs need to open up their eyes and open up their horizons and actually look because I'm sure there are a whole bunch of minority coaches out, you know, potential coaches out there who could do the job, who could do the job a lot better than some of the other coaches out there. You just, you know, they just got to, you know, expand their horizons rather than just be forced to interview
one
person.
I mean, I think that'll do that. I think that's what the rule kind of does to me. I mean, it exposes them to some other candidates that maybe they wouldn't consider. So, you know, maybe you get one of the more highly qualified guys as a part of the rule. So, you know, maybe it opens that door a little bit more.
Do you think all the blame goes to the organization, like, or the university, or do you think it's a situation where some of these minority head coaches, if they take a coordinator position at these big, at these FBS schools, then does that make them a more attractive candidate, or is it just, you know what I'm saying? Because I don't know. I guess it's kind of hard if I just want to interview one minority head coach just to get that out of the way. But if you have somebody in there, like for example with Mike Tomlin, he had the opportunity of going in there and he just blew the Steelers organization away. So that's how he was able to get his job, and he was a more viable candidate because he had showed that during his position or his side of the field, he was a master of it basically.
Yeah, well, I got to do my well, actually. But I think I'll look back at that, and Ron Rivera actually interviewed with the Steelers first during that job. So he was actually the Rooney Rule guy. I think Tomlin interviewed with Miami, and then he got the Pittsburgh job. So, you know, that's how that kind of works. But, yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that because it's like if a guy's a coordinator at Alabama, defensive coordinator, then, you know, of course it's going to – it's probably more likely that a school will hire him if he gets that interview. Because if guys have the high-level jobs, I'm sure, like, schools are knocking down their door to make them the head coach. So, like John was saying, I think it's going to open up the AD's eyes to guys who maybe wouldn't be on their radar. So it can only help. More opportunities to interview will only lead to more jobs to me. I'm sure there'll be some where it's just like, let me get this out of the way, but we already know who our guy is. But, I mean, and that happens, of course, that happens in the NFL more often than not, but still I think it can only do good.
What were you about to say, Trent?
Oh, I guess because, I mean, it can be that you can have that thinking, but also it can be the thinking of, well, this dude has interviewed has had a lot of different interviews, but he still doesn't have a job, and that can be a negative viewpoint also, and a negative standpoint, just because, okay, why do you have all these interviews, but you're not hired anywhere?
I mean, I don't know about that, because really, of course, everybody doesn't interview well, but if you had that product on the field, I mean, sometimes we flunk interviews or not a good interviewer, but if your team is consistently good, I'm sure that'll speak more than a guy being a bad interviewer, because he can coach your eyes up and get W's, which is all they care about, money in the pockets and all that. So I don't really think the interview. And then if they are not a good interviewer, maybe they messed up on that first one and they get it the next year or 2 years later, and then there you go, another opportunity. So
But we act like these organizations or universities don't talk, or these ADs don't talk to each other. So you have, like, ADs talking with each other, so they know the candidate pool, and they know who's out there, they know who not to interview or who to interview. So it's a lot that goes into that, just because, like you said, you have like these ADs have relationships with each other. So if you have a bad – I don't know, if you may have rubbed one the wrong way, then that can mess up any job down the road.
Yeah, That's all definitely true. That's all definitely true. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if this goes anywhere. I don't know if it will go anywhere. Got to see more support, but I mean, it's a good idea. But quickly, fellas, let me ask you: conference play is coming up for the MEAC. Hampton, you know, is as good as advertised. You think North Carolina Central will get it back on track? They're 2-2 in the conference.
Yeah, it's still early in the season, so you still don't know what you have. They've had a couple slip-ups where most North Carolina Central fans aren't used to this, so you don't know what to expect right now. But you were saying, like you said, they have Hampton, I want to say Saturday, and you have Norfolk State also next week. Those are the top two teams, and they're both undefeated in the conference right now. So with these next two games, you'll definitely see what you're working with.
Yeah, with conference play starting everywhere, it's like in the CIAA or in the SWAC or any of the HBCU conferences, you got to look first at the definitely conference champions from last year. In the MEAC's case, North Carolina Central isn't as good as they were last year, but you still got to think all these teams beat up on each other. So, and we see it in the conference tournaments too. Like the regular season champ doesn't always make it out. So it's like we'll see how battle tested all these schools look, and then I guess maybe in a couple weeks you can really see once we get into the end of January and into the middle of February, how these teams will really look. You know, I'm looking around at some of the standings from last year and kind of basing my predictions on those. So I'm just kind of studying those schools and trying to follow all four conferences. Of course, SWAG, MEAC, SIAC, and the CIAA as well. Since basketball, you know, it's conference season all around college basketball, so it's about to get real heated.
It's about to get real heated. I like that. Well, thanks. We're at the end of the show. Hopefully we can get head coach, North Carolina Central head coach, Lavelle Moten on the show. Still waiting to hear back from him. He told me he'd have to check his schedule, but hopefully that'll entice him a little more. They win it. Thanks for joining us on the show, y'all. Jonathan Alexander, your host, staff writer for the News and Observer. Trenton Little, Rome Brown. Thanks again, guys.
All right, peace.
All right, no problem. Good night.
All right, good night. Take care.